information is free.
The law? Of
course. There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law?
Of course.
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Been sold a bill of goods, if we believe it. Another warning from the well of true believers. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 166th episode of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 16th, 2010, and we've got all your alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Morning in America and the path to collapse, investigations, interviews, and unearthed documents, behavior placement, greenwashing, and banana republics, transhumanism, technology, eggs, and fireballs. All that and so much more is right here, episode 166, April 16th, 2010, and it's MediaMonarchy.com. America, That's brand new music from Ted Leo and the Pharmacists and their brand new record, The Brutalist Bricks. And it's Morning in America, but of course they're referring to mourn for the loss of something. And that's why we're here. Ladies and gentlemen, let me formally welcome you to episode 166 of Media Monarchy. It's April 16th, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org. And huge thanks to the stations that broadcast Media Monarchy live to you around the states and around the world on the web live. ZeroPointRadio.com. Also blasting out 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming. The worldwide home of free speech is RevereRadio.net. And our newest live affiliate, LaughlinRadio.com, down in Laughlin, Nevada. Of course, massive thanks to all the other internet and pirate and community radio stations that broadcast Media Monarchy, like 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, FrOlympia.org, Free Radio Olympia, 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, 93.9 FM in Boulder, Colorado, thanks to PhantomRadio.org. 90.7 FM in Kiseelof, Alaska on KWMD, thanks to OneSkyRadio.com. 87.9 FM in Canton, Georgia, thanks to StickAM.com/Ground Zero Radio. And my man Glenn at CascadiaPublicRadio.org makes a ton of shows available at a smaller file size. And on the opposite end, my man Jeff at Radio23.org supplies the high-quality feed of the Media Monarchy podcast, suitable for rebroadcast. And I suppose I've shown my hand there that I'm quite sleep-deprived, my friends. It's draining work being a one-man band behind the Media Monarchy Kingdom. So much for you. You can, of course, reach out and touch someone. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. And MySpace, Twitter, YouTube. Send me an email, MediaMonarchy@Yahoo.com or Gmail. Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net. and archive.org, bringing you the shows. Again, it's April 16th, 2010, and as we look at the breaking news, bank shares accelerated their declines Friday after the United States Securities and Exchange Commission announced fraud charges against Goldman Sachs, the largest donor to our current puppet frontman president. Changing the face, changing the pace from the previous puppet president, but the agenda rolls forward. We're nonpartisan here on Media Monarchy. The two-party system is a fraud. It exists to prop up the system. And anytime a grassroots movement starts to break away, you see what we've been describing in detail for you over the last months and even years on the site and show. The co-opting of what was essentially the libertarian, anti-Federal Reserve, anti-wars of aggression, pro-individual liberties. That's now been co-opted. But I believe, as we're going to see in this episode, that it's not a secret. Folks seem to be really engaged right now. Now, what we typically see when we switch between the two phony parties is that one side goes to sleep and the other side gets energized. We're trying to wake up those who voted for the guy just because he had a D after his name. Coming at it, blowing apart the left cover. We're trying to come at it from the conscious left. Iceland volcano, airlines face logistical nightmare. Experts differ on health risk of volcanic ash from the eruption in Iceland. Mayor Bloomberg gives thumbs up to conservative Tea Party movement. Serious problems turn up at other Massey energy mines. So much going on. So much going on, and again, my friends, I can't do it all justice for you here on the show or on the site. I try and lay out the path, and we can communicate and share information and hopefully bring a higher level of awareness for all of us. I'm learning as I go, just as we all are. Now, before we get into Morning in America, I want to throw out a couple of thanks for the recent donations to Media Monarchy. Another donation from Chris on Homeland Lane in Texas. And a new donation from Travis on Smith Lane in Texas. Your DVD will be coming soon to Smith Lane. And I thank you for the donation. Again, Media Monarchy accepts donations to keep the site running, pay for the domains, pay the DJ dues, pay the piper, fix things, spread the love around. $10 gets you the new DVD from Richard Andrew Grove, 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line. And again, as we see the headlines at the top of the news about Goldman Sachs being charged with fraud, the 2020 Hindsight DVD only becomes more and more prescient and important as the days go by. So again, huge thanks. And if you haven't donated, we greatly appreciate it. And what we're going to start off with are the kind of things that we can do with a little more capital floating our boat in the monarchy kingdom, my friends. I announced to you last week that we confirmed, and yes, we have had an interview with Reverend Billy of the Church of Life After Shopping. The interview's all set. I'm pretty proud of it. I think it sounds good. I think it looks good. I think it plays well. I think it effectively communicates what we're facing. That interview will be available shortly after this episode is available. So it's all coming down the pike very, very soon. So my friends, let me whet your appetite with a brief clip from my interview with Reverend Billy on the Mountaintop Revival.
Well, we hope that we break through to the commercial media. There's been significant coal coverage since the disaster, of course, over the last week. And time again, we see the commercial media not mentioning J.P. Morgan Chase. We see the commercial media not mentioning mountaintop removal. They just talk about Massey Energy and their inability to ensure the safety of their traditional underground mining. So they are steadfastly depoliticized. We have to call them on that. But I agree with what you just said, which is that there's a rise of a new media, that we can't sit around and wait for the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times to, you know, the Wall Street Journal is the Republicans, the New York Times is the Democrats. and we can't, they're off in a world of their own. Chase is supposed to be, they're friends of Barack Obama's. Jamie Dimon dines at the White House once a month. And, so I guess they're in the Democratic category.
Well, I think they're resisting regulation,
but they're, the Democrats and Republicans are fighting each other, but meanwhile, they're often, that's kind of like the center and the right. There's no real progressive agenda there. I'm out here saying that there are new economies that are beginning, James. We say we're in a recovery with its jobless problem, but we're in a recovery right now. And the NPR and all the rest of the commercial media have just gone back to reporting the numbers from the stock exchange and from the corporate earnings. But there are other economies that are rising up as the corporate economy becomes less and less people-oriented. And we see community-sourced agriculture, farmers markets. We see thrift economies. We see skill swapping.
Yes.
You know, we see all sorts of homemade economies where people are rolling up their sleeves and doing that cliched American thing, which is rolling up your sleeves and what do I have to do? So many Americans, not as hysterical as the Tea Party people, but a little bit more, just a little bit more humane and a little bit more ready to work and not shout so much. We're recreating and healing our neighborhoods, our communities. And that is, there's a certain, you know, anti-government aspect to that. At least if the government is merely the representative of the corporations, we have to take responsibility for our own economies. And that is not something that the commercial media chooses to report. That is an odd little story in the media, if it's represented at all. Of course, you know, when we're starting new economies that are basically invisible to the metrics of the corporate economy. Well, then we're not going to be buying ads in the New York Times, are we? You know,
absolutely not.
Well, they won't report on us. So, but that I'm encouraged that so many people have. Taken the mountaintop removal and sent it on. Our little mountains inside lobbies, I've just seen those images fly around the world. It's very encouraging that there is a kind of democracy that's insisted on, even as the FCC and the Supreme Court and so forth, they're trying to gain control of the internet. But as of right now, they're very, very interesting if underreported things going on. Hallelujah.
That's just a little taster of my interview with Reverend Billy. And my friends, again, I can't tell you how excited I am about it. I think it's the kind of timely, positive, the personal is political kind of thing that we need to be doing. And I'm going to need all of your help in spreading this interview when it drops with Reverend Billy. It's going to be nice and short. You can spread it. It's going to be easily accessible and digestible and exciting and invigorating. And I even made a quick little clip, a little longer than the one you just heard, that's already available up on youtube.com/mediamonarchy. So again, my friends, that's the taster, and that's what we try and do for you, and trying to constantly step up our game here on Media Monarchy. As times get crazier, we need more sane voices that, again, essentially, and what we discuss in that interview, is that the elites like to play us against each other in all our phony constructs, liberal versus conservative, and Tea Party, and blah, 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 and black versus white, and anarchists, and the story is the banksters versus us. And that's what it's been for hundreds of years. And the mask is starting to slip, and that's what we see happening, and we're at a pivotal point, and we may even be crossing some sort of point of no return. I'm not a doomsayer, but you know in your gut, things are changing. To use that worn-out cliche. So, my friends, let's get to it now, and blast through a ton of headlines. Some we're going to have to fly by. Others we're going to get into in a little more detail on the 4:15 News Purge, titled for our opening track by Ted Leo, Morning in America. We're going to start out with some of the latest BioWars and EnviroHealth updates with a fantastic new article from James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. World Health Organization appoints H1N1 cover-up committee. Reports that the WHO is appointing an independent committee to investigate its own conduct in the H1N1 panic of 2009 has been tempered by the fact that one of the committee's members, John McKenzie, was in fact one of the advisors who urged the WHO to declare a pandemic in the first place. He also, of course, has ties to vaccine manufacturers, making him part of the very charge being investigated. That the World Health Organization relied on advisors with financial interests in declaring a pandemic regardless of the facts on the ground. Evidence continues to mount that the WHO declared a pandemic for the relatively mild H1N1 outbreak last year in order to trigger billions of dollars of automatic vaccine contracts for the benefit of WHO advisors with connections to Big Pharma. In the face of growing opposition and a loss of credibility due to the conflicts of interest among key WHO advisors, World Health Organization Director Margaret Chan called last Monday for a, quote, frank, critical, transparent, credible, and independent review of our performance, end quote, before entering a closed-door meeting with the independent experts. No photographers were allowed inside, and press was only allowed occasional access to the meeting. The banksters and the pharmaceutical interests and the military-industrial complex and the militainment-industrial complex, all of those things that are assaulting us consciously, they all connect. You'll find the same societies, families, and organizations. As we just heard, and what we discussed with Reverend Billy, J.P. Morgan funds 80% of mountaintop removal mining in Appalachia. Their dirty deeds include aiding and abetting Bernie Madoff, colluding with the Nazis, owning over half of the pharmaceutical interests along with the Rockefellers. Of course, John D. Rockefeller IV, Senator of West Virginia. It all connects. And we see it time and time and time again. And I say it time and time and time again. Multi-generational families and organizations owe no allegiance to any of your gods or teams or nations or flags or any of those things. They're in it for power. They print the money. They're not in it for money. They throw us those baubles, and again, we tear each other apart over it. But again, I digress. Let's go down the list of the BioWars EnviroHealth updates. And our second one relates, of course, to our first headline. The Club of Rome behind eco-fascist purge to criminalize climate skepticism, ultra-elitist organization that openly bragged of inventing global warming to scare and manipulate population behind a new onslaught of green fascism, which would criminalize questioning man-made climate change. The British lawyer, who called last week for introducing international laws through the UN, which would make it a crime against humanity to question the reality of anthropogenic global warming, has close ties to the Club of Rome. It has nothing to do with Rome. It's a deceptive name. It's another elitist think tank filled with multi-generational eugenics freaks. The Club of Rome, the ultra-elitist organization which openly bragged of how it invented the climate change scare as a means of manipulating the global population to accept, yes, world government. British lawyer-turned-campaigner Polly Higgins recently launched an initiative to have the UN put pressure on national governments to pass laws that would declare the mass destruction of ecosystems a crime against peace punishable by the ICC. You know, just as another sidebar, we should note that JP Morgan Chase is also buying up the carbon credit companies that we'll be paying our phony carbon taxes to, our carbon indulgences. So even if you believe in man-made global warming, and not that carbon dioxide is what plants breathe, it's plant food, but they don't want to talk about the GMOs, the cross species, the poisons in the water, the poisons in the food. The Club of Rome talked about making mankind the enemy. You can look it up. The Club of Rome, the first global revolution. They found that a threat such as global warming would fit the bill. Homeland Security seeks bio-agent sniffing cell phones. Again, the prepping for a bio-attack. That's from Danger Room. Amping it up even more. From the Herald Sun out of Australia. All bets are off if U.S. under biological attack, warns Shillery. New polls reported by the Associated Press show resistance to Obamacare rising. Agribusiness profits, mutant germs, and us. More on that from Food Freedom. General Electric violated its own safety rules over their MRI drug. And we, of course, have recently seen, and we'll talk more about, Pfizer and Bayer. And again, folks, look into the history of Bayer. Look at what they've done. Look into the history of IBM. Look at what they've done. These are all the same organizations and corporations and families and societies that cause the problems that will then pose as your savior. Hitting a little too close to home for my comfort, from foodsafetynews.com, child dies of E. coli infection at a Vancouver, Portland area daycare. This was actually in Clark County, Washington, but not too far away here from Portland, Oregon. Speeding up biodetection from defensenews.com. Anthrax scare in Muncie, Indiana. Anthrax outbreak in Scotland continues. Both of those from BioPrepWatch. Two disgusting stories concerning our animal friends. Taser International, and I got the story from theregister.co.uk, which again writes in a very techie, very British way, so I had to change the headline to make a little more sense. Taser International doses a herd of sheep with methamphetamine and then tests their compliance device upon them. Jacking up sheep with meth and testing tasers on them. Why would they be doing that? Even worse, because it will grow and morph and mutate and spread in ways that we can't even imagine or hope to hopefully contain. Out of New Zealand, from the New Zealand Herald, human genes to be injected into goats, cows, and sheep. What could possibly go wrong? Details about BioWatch come to light. Time magazine lists fluoride as an environmental toxin. The old skull and bones rag is right on this one. And another note about the Icelandic volcanic eruption. Dial of flight stems travel chaos in wake of Icelandic ash cloud. And that is a lot of the headlines that we see concerning how is this going to affect the airline industry. But again, in my backyard, as we move on to the drug war updates, Redmond, Oregon police stage drug trafficking check.
The latest effort by Redmond police to crack down on drug use has gained a lot of attention and sparked some online debate.
That's right, and not just at KTVZ.com, where we first told you about the drug interdiction traffic stops along Highway 97, but other national sites too. So what's all the talk about, and what exactly is this new tactic Redmond police are using? News Channel 21's Kate Paul is live in Redmond to explain for us tonight. Kate?
Yeah, Adam and Nina, we're here in Redmond tonight along the same strip of the highway where that drug patrol took place last week. Now, as you can see, it is a pretty busy stretch of the road, and Redmond police say doing it here was a success, but the feedback from the general public was kind of a mixed bag. It's a high-speed highway with a lot of traffic, sometimes more than one kind.
Drug trafficking, a good portion of our crimes in our community are directly related to drug use, drug distribution, and drug manufacture.
So late last week, Redmond police implemented a plan to fight back. From 2:30 to 5:30 on Thursday, traffic patrols were here at the Highway 97 reroute north of Redmond. Along with their presence, drivers also saw this warning of drug dogs in use.
We had a drug dog available to use as a tool to help us in locating drugs being trafficked through the city of Redmond.
In total, police pulled over 12 cars for normal traffic violations. Two of those 12 gave police reason to suspect drug possession. After drug-sniffing dogs went to work, Redmond police made arrests in both. Undebatably a success for police, but does it infringe on people's rights or at least step on toes? Police say they've heard both bad but mostly good feedback.
Well, every once in a while, people need to know that their law enforcement people are doing something about drugs and that they're taking an active approach instead of a reactive approach. It's good to get up front on it.
Redmond police say they were very conservative in the interdiction, and the whole effort, they say, was really in the best interest of the general public.
We're very careful to abide by the rights of citizens, and we took an oath to uphold the Constitution, and we're very diligent to that effort.
And Redmond police said they do plan on doing more of these traffic patrols in the future, at least once a month from here on out, in fact. Now, if you have an opinion on this, we encourage you to log on to KTVZ.com because it is the topic of our online poll this week. So go on there and cast your vote. Live in Redmond, Kate Paul, News Channel 21.
Another one of the masks that have been slipping is the phony, fraudulent, criminal, immoral drug war. So, of course, they'll arrest you for the drugs that they bring in so that their buddies that run the private prisons can keep their business going. The revolving door. And isn't it interesting? And, of course, we did just mention meth a minute ago with the sheep. How hard they come down on drugs that you can make yourself. You're cutting into the man's profit. Now, is that a defense of meth? Absolutely not. But do your homework, and you know, and you'll see the connections between the intelligence agencies and international quote-unquote terrorists and the drug trade and the wars. And again, it's all connected. You'll find the same cast of bastards. Interestingly enough, quickly, on KTVZ out of Oregon, where we just got that clip from, they updated their article, and again, the Thursday they were referring to was two Thursdays ago. They've updated the story, despite heat, Redmond police defend drug checks. Despite an online firestorm over the supposed illegality of a Redmond drug interdiction effort late last week, police said Tuesday the reactions they received have been overwhelmingly positive. The story has been reported on around the web, such as an article at Infowars.com headlined, "Redmond Cops Use Drugs as Excuse to Establish Warrantless Checkpoint." And that gets to it. That gets to the heart of it. The other drug war note is a positive drug story. Medical marijuana bill moves through Maryland Senate in a landslide. More on that from the Huffington Post. And now we turn to, again, what is directly related to the failing and flailing drug war is the new financial world order, or the econo crash. The first one we're going to hit from the Washington Times. Income falls 3.2% during Obama's term. Real personal income for Americans, excluding government payouts such as Social Security, have fallen by 3.2% since President Obama took office in January 2009, according to the Commerce Department's Bureau of Economic Analysis. For comparison, real personal income during the first 15 months in office for Shrub, who inherited a milder recession from his predecessor, dropped 0.4%, excluding blah, blah, blah. One party brings you up, one party brings you down. One's the big loving daddy, the other's the disciplinarian. But, as we've always said, the left hand sometimes doesn't know what the right hand's doing. Senate probe finds fraud in WaMu mortgage lending. You remember Washington Mutual, right? That bank that was destroyed in a controlled demolition by J.P. Morgan and the FDIC. More on WaMu's gruesome autopsy from Mother Jones. And again, possibly a positive story from the New York Post. If Clear Channel can restructure its debt in the next few years, it will likely collapse. Who will get all those wonderful billboards? Bank worker pleads guilty to hacking 100 ATMs. More on that from Threat Level. And a frightening one from the Big Brother Corporation. The BBC is reporting UK cash is being replaced by cards. The cashless control grid being set up before your very eyes. And we move to the geopolitics. In a story that happened last Saturday, that is a massive one, that again, too many crazy things going on in the world, it's hard to focus on any one thing. Polish President Lech Kaczynski killed in plane crash. We'll get the original report going back to last Saturday, April 10th, from The Guardian. The Polish president, Lech Kaczynski, and his wife were among the 96 people killed when their plane crashed in thick fog on its approach to a regional airport in Russia. This stirred up a lot. And we give you a few extra supplemental contextual links to try and flesh this out. CNN's analysis on the ramifications of the crash on Polish politics. One forest, two Polish tragedies, 70 years apart from the Fort Mill times. Jonathan Elinoff of CoreOfCorruption.com and his newest site, NewWorldOrderReport.com. What is the conspiracy with the Polish plane crash? He lays out a list of oddities that, again, my friends, you got to go to NewWorldOrderReport.com to get more into that. But what do we see? The moves immediately following. Businessweek reported that Andrzej Olechowski will enter a presidential race in Poland to replace the late Kaczynski. The Polish Peasants Party, the junior partner in the governing coalition, will probably nominate its leader, Economy Minister Waldemar Polak, and Andrzej Olechowski, a former foreign minister and finance minister, will run as an independent. Odds on Olechowski. Why? He is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and was an economist for the World Bank, working closely with the banksters. On down the geopolitical list, explosive tossed over fence at U.S. consulate in Mexico. Pakistan holds its largest ever military exercise. Israel ranks sixth in the world with up to 300 nukes. And of course, this all swirls around with the Prince of Peace Prize, the Obamasiah, presiding over this nuclear dog and pony show. Which, of course, the no-show is the country that won't sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Meanwhile, they point fingers at all their imagined enemies, and they're stashing hundreds of nukes away, and of course, with the billions of dollars we give them. Of course, during the press and during all the swirling around of this nuclear show, you know, the questions are going to come up. Obama was forced to say, well, Israel should sign the treaty. More on that from antiwar.com. A couple of history mystery notes. Officer pleads guilty in post-Katrina Danziger Bridge killing. You always thought that was a crazy conspiracy theory, that the cops were there to put the smack down, to confiscate weapons, even from the high and dry. It was another drill, if you will. On a completely different history mystery note, from the smoking gun, Betty Page, pinup queen, FBI informant. And on to some media memes that segues nicely. And of course, it's always tough. One week, you're patting someone on the back for their strong stance on a particular issue. And then the next week, not so much. Last week, we read an op-ed from Sting, singer-songwriter, ex-police, you know, humanitarian. He wrote an op-ed about ending the fraudulent, immoral drug war. But now here we are a week later, Sting stung by controversy over secret concert for a dictator's daughter. Can't make this up. Human rights activists are demanding the superstar Stinger donate to charity the more than $2 million in blood money he received for playing a secret concert for the daughter of one of the world's most brutal dictators. It's not where his principles lie, according to human rights activists who are demanding that he throw back the blood money for playing a secret concert for the daughter of one of the world's most brutal dictators, Islam Karimov of Uzbekistan. An interesting video. iPad tortured to death in mass social experiment. If you saw somebody smashing up a brand new iPad on the street, would you freak out and go, "Oh my God, why are you doing that?" And yet our fellow man and women, brothers and sisters around the world, beaten and tortured, and were tacitly silent. The other video is the full run of clips of Jesse Ventura hosting Larry King Live. Of course, he's been making all the rounds with his new show and his new best-selling book, American Conspiracies. A couple of murder and mayhem notes, which I guess, my friends, is very fortunately short, because as we say, and as we've been saying now for several years, every time April rolls around, we brace ourselves for some sort of homegrown errorism event. And we are, of course, not out of the woods yet as we get to next week, and we're going to see the protests, and we're going to get to this in just a minute, on 419 and 420. We're going to have all the political spectrums fighting with each other, essentially. And again, it's not black versus white. It's the state and the banksters versus us. But somehow around this time every year, we always seem to have a Virginia Tech or a Columbine or an Oklahoma City or a Waco, all within the same few days in April. Chicago shooter says, "Too bad I ran out of bullets." Six shot, one killed in Muskogee, Oklahoma, Arrowhead Mall. The mass murder contagion. But now we're back to the Prince of Peace Prize. Yes, the Obamasiah. Where, again, and it's going to get even better, Ron Paul correctly points out that Obama is not a socialist. Near the end of the third day of this year's Southern Republican Leadership Conference, it was time for Representative Ron Paul to take the stage. Quote, "The question has been raised about whether or not our president is a socialist. I'm sure there's some people here who believe it, but in the technical sense and the economic definition of what a socialist is, no, he's not. He's not a socialist. He's a corporatist. And unfortunately, we have corporatists inside the GOP, and that means you take care of corporations, and corporations take over and run the country." Mussolini said, "Fascism should more correctly be called corporatism, because it's the merging of the states and the corporations, And that's what we see. Doesn't matter which fake political party, which sports team you align yourself with, they're shadows on the wall of the cave. Fascinatingly enough, Rasmussen poll shows Obama in dead heat with Ron Paul in a hypothetical 2012 matchup. And there's a great piece from Justin Raimondo on antiwar.com on Ron Paul in the libertarian moment that we see it rising and rising. There was the straw poll at this conference where we just quoted Dr. Paul. Paul won the straw poll again, just as he did 2 years ago, 3 years ago. A story on the EastValleyTribune.com asks if Obama's going off the deep end. They, of course, mentioned this was several months ago, an interview with Steve Croft, where he was asked a serious question about the Econo crash, and he just erupted into a fit of nervous laughter, and Croft asked him, "Are you punch drunk?" A recent analysis by Roger Simon of PJTV Media maintains that Obama is showing signs of mental illness. A wide variety of commenters have observed that Obama displays severe narcissism. Obama's conceited, and he's demonstrating a serious disassociation from reality. A recent case in point was Obama's bizarre and meandering 17-minute, 2,500-word answer to the simple question about how he could justify raising taxes for Obamacare during a recession when citizens are already overtaxed. Obama's wildly inappropriate answer left the audience stunned and led commentator Charles Krauthammer to mockingly say, "I don't know why you're so surprised. It's only nine times the length of the Gettysburg Address, and after all, Lincoln was answering an easier question." The lapse of delusion occurred in front of a friendly audience. Overall, Obama seems to be slipping in a slightly more delusional state these days. This is an op-ed from EastValleyTribune.com. Obama going off the deep end. But of course, he's not too far off the deep end. He still knows how to make that dough. Obama quietly hosts a $30,400 a couple Miami Beach fundraiser. At said fundraiser, Obama jokes about tax day protests at the Estefan fundraiser. That's right, Gloria Estefan. Army to court martial birther officer. That's, I believe, Terry Laitken, who we mentioned last week. Who is Don Johnson? Don Johnson. Not the Miami Vice guy. This is the person who withdrew as Obama's nominee for the Office of Legal Counsel. More on that from allgov.com. Harry Reid told Nevada voters, quote, "I need your help. People are after me." Which, of course, sounds much funnier, a little taken out of context. Most Tea Partiers deem Palin unqualified for president, and they are quite right on that. Hating the government finally goes mainstream. Another great article, this time from WashingtonExaminer.com, that again refers to what we just said Justin Raimondo writes about in Ron Paul and the Libertarian Moment. Don't let the fake GOP conservatives hijack what is, again, what we said, a real grassroots movement against the Federal Reserve, against the banksters, against illegal wars of aggression, pro-personal liberties. And another bit of good news, CBS poll shows that the people know that the GOP have absorbed the Tea Party. And that's what we've been saying for months. Completely taken over and co-opted. The ideas are still there. Don't follow some leader. Be the change you want to see in the world. That's pretty simple. Simple to say, not so simple to do. But you know. Now we get into Police State International. So now we're talking about the 419 D.C. protests. We were going to have anti-government and pro-gun groups join forces. I believe this is all turning into a perfect storm that sets the stage quite nicely for provocateur events. When you see feds or infiltrators or provocateurs cause violence in order to justify the police crackdown, to demonize dissent. But there's a lot of finger-pointing going on. All the anarchists are all agents. All the Tea Partiers are all racist. All the cops are all... A lot of finger-pointing going on, and we don't really need that right now. And that's really the evil genius of what was and what still lives today as COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, where the feds would infiltrate groups to break them apart. All you gotta do is sow the seeds of mistrust. I don't think Bob should be the leader. I think Joe should be the leader. And I think Steve's an agent. You sow those seeds, and now we're to the point where it doesn't even have to happen because they don't have to be there. The feds don't have to do it. We're doing it ourselves. We're pointing the fingers at everybody. Be very careful with that. And again, this show's going to go out, and it's going to be my weekend, and we won't talk again until next week, and we've got a whole long, ugly week to get through. So again, be careful. Provocateurs openly announce plans to stage Tea Party violence. Tea Party agent provocateur outed in Portland, Oregon, the guy who was running the CrashTheTeaParty.org site, making threats online. He's now outed and now under investigation and will probably lose his teaching gig. But the Oath Keepers have withdrawn from this 419 rally over violent threats, and I think that's a smart move, and I think it'd probably be a smart move for everybody. We've often wondered on this show if the old protesting is a dead paradigm anyway. Poll claims 60% of U.S. believes domestic terrorists will stage attack within a year. And again, we've spent much time in the past, and if you're not aware of it, you need to go do some homework on the false flag operations of Oklahoma City and all the questions surrounding that, and Waco and Columbine and Virginia Tech. The oddities run a mile. Agent provocateurs disrupt Washington State protest in Olympia, my friends? Question mark. One day soon, will we all be homegrown terrorists? More on that from neithercore.us. A candidate in the upcoming UK general election says, make national citizen service compulsory. As we've said time and time again, when the fake economy collapses, the only jobs will be working for the nanny state. CCTV surveillance makes Chicago the most closely watched U.S. city. My man Zach clued me in to a possible Black Widow meme. So we're tracking that, and here's an article from ABC News, Why Women Turn to Terrorism, calling the bombers in Russia recently Black Widows, calling the Jihad Janes and Jamies the homegrown aorist, damaged individuals swept up in this swirl of Stasi land. But again, we track the memes and the ideas and the predictive programming, so plant that seed in your head for Black Widows. Occupied Washington, D.C. Disgusting video of Maryland police beating the shit out of a student. If you must, you can see the video, but you know what it's going to be. 5-on-1. Batons flailing. Boots stomping. And they're making all of us compact into our little gangs. Ex-NSA worker charged in classified leak case. A huge story, but again, my friends, we have to keep moving. Los Angeles preparing for nuclear attack. Homeland Stupidity developing a mass evacuation simulation for stadiums. We've noted in recent weeks the lack of terror drills and even the cancellation of some terror drills and even the movement and standing down of some of the police state measures. As we've noted time and time again, Fletcher Prouty, the man called X in the JFK film, was a real man, high-level military officer. He always contended that all you have to do is break standard operating procedure, and you can assassinate a president while he's rolling down the street in an open-air car on Elm Street. The last few notes on this massive news purge are on the war whores, and a few updates on the amazing scoop from WikiLeaks.org that we covered extensively last week. But now we know, and they have admitted, Julian Assange, one of the co-founders of WikiLeaks, says that the collateral murder video, which is again available on collateralmurder.com, was leaked by officers. Robert Gates says the video is painful to see, but it won't have a lasting impact. WikiLeaks also politely asks the Central Intelligence Agency to, you know, stop spying on it and following them around. Iraq war vet says we were, quote, we were told to just shoot people and the officers would take care of us. Destruction of videotapes documented in CIA email. NATO forces gather for exercise Joint Warrior. Surgeon removes live explosive from Afghan soldier's head. Multiple tours of duty lead to, of course, PTSD. And lastly, Democrat rep out of California, Lynn Woolsey, has given her 350th speech against the Afghan-Iraq wars. Let's now move to the Econo Crash, where a new article from Webster Tarpley up on tarpley.net asks the question, must the U.S. follow the old USSR down the path to collapse? Is the United States now inexorably fated to follow the Soviet Union on the path leading to social breakdown, internal collapse, secessionism, and general chaos? This question is objectively now on the agenda, and not surprisingly, a gaggle of foundation-funded professors and other experts, led by that notorious British reactionary Niall Ferguson, are gloating in schadenfreude and jubilation that the United States is now irrevocably doomed to imperial implosion, based largely on Paul Kennedy's dangerous half-truth about what's called imperial overstretch. And not only that, Ferguson appears to be preparing the ground for some kind of massive bear raid against the U.S. dollar emanating from London, some kind of speculative thunderbolt capable of bringing the U.S. breakdown crisis to a fast-track culmination. The answer presented here to the question posed in the title is that, while the gravity of the U.S. crisis is undeniable, it would be criminal stupidity to assert that we're dealing with some kind of irresistible cycle of U.S. national decline. Quite the contrary. The historical experience of even the New Deal, if properly evaluated, reliably indicates a broad array of economic reform measures which are immediately available to lead the U.S. and the world out of the current crisis. The challenge to all serious American thinkers is to specify the needed components of a general U.S. return to a regulated and dirigistic New Deal economic model. Dirigism, and we provide you with some of the links to flesh out these terms that, again, we're all learning, I'm learning. Dirigism goes back, I believe, to French origin, and it basically means the government exerts strict control over monetary policies. So, need we point out that both Obama's corporatist Democrat Party and the right-wing radical Republican Party are both hysterically hostile to the New Deal? Analysts who imagine that their role is to produce ever more dazzling, bombastic, rhetorical invectives against the Wall Street collapse we see all around us are simply irrelevant at this point. Every real intellectual leader needs to already have an answer ready for the question, what's your program for overcoming the current world economic depression? Where are your solutions? Those who don't deal in such answers can't be taken seriously anymore. A few other related updates to the Econo Crash. An interesting take on what your IRS taxes really pay for. And you should know that they go to pay off the interest to the fraudulent Federal Reserve, who loans us money at interest. Our next bit we could have filed under a number of different subjects, but again, everything is connected. It's all connected. Ohio official tells residents to arm themselves amid police cuts.
People in Ashtabula County are apparently taking the advice of their public officials to buy guns and learn how to use them. The county is facing huge cuts in law enforcement, and Channel 3's Dick Russ found that residents there are concerned about this.
Well, you know, over the month, the strength of the Sheriff's Department in Ashtabula County has been reduced by more than half because of budget cuts and the resulting layoffs. It's been suggested people will have to protect themselves, and many are doing just that.
When there's only one patrol car per shift for the entire county, and that's over 700 square miles, it may have been just a matter of time until Ashtabula County residents heard this advice.
Arm themselves, be very careful, and just be vigilant, because we're going to have to look after each other.
Gun dealers and firearms instructors in the county say their business has really picked up since the Sheriff's Department layoffs started.
As far as him telling you to arm yourselves and protect yourselves, you don't have any other option. We don't have the law enforcement out here to handle it right now.
Williams and another certified instructor have had nothing but full classes of county residents applying for concealed carry permits. Interest has doubled recently.
That's exactly why they're coming. So that they can protect themselves. They don't feel that they are protected. They will protect. They want to be able to protect themselves.
And with the county jail down to just 30 prisoners because it doesn't have enough guards, county residents had another reason to worry. 700 people waiting to be locked up, but can't be.
I would tell the people, certainly they got to be vigilant. They got to know what's going on around them. But they should not hesitate to call, because if it's anything that is serious, we're going to be coming.
But again, with only one police car per shift for the whole 700 square miles, how long would it take for them to get there? And that's what's driving people to the gun stores and the firing ranges, Ramona, not lack of confidence in law enforcement there in Ashtabula County, but just realizing their lack of manpower.
Yeah, that's tough to believe, one car. But county residents, they have a chance to do something about this next month.
They do. There's a 0.5% sales tax levy on the ballot on May 4th. If it passes, it might alleviate some of the law enforcement pressure, but unemployment in Ashtabula County is higher than the state average, which is high, you know, and so we'll just have to see where people's priorities are and what they decide in May.
Yeah, tough times all over.
The last couple Econo Crash notes. That's right. Jim Tucker has tracked the secretive elitist organization that sets the policies for their minions a little bit down the rungs on the pyramid. The Bilderberg Group will meet June 3rd through the 6th in Spain. Our last Econo Crash note, and we noted on the coups and chaos going on in Kyrgyzstan. Kyrgyzstan's head reveals the overthrown president left only 80 mil in the budget, meaning they're broke. My friends, time flies. We're already into hour number 2 of episode 166 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 16th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. And we continue with latest 9/11 updates, investigations, interviews, and Angel is next. First, from the French agency press, Ahmadinejad urges Ban Ki-moon to probe 9/11 attacks. Iran's president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has written to UN chief Ban Ki-moon of the Unification Church, the Moonies. He's the head of the United Nations, asking him to launch an investigation into 9/11. Quote, "The minimum expectation from your excellency is to set up an independent and trusted fact-finding group to comprehensively investigate the real factors behind 9/11. They didn't say when the letter was sent. The hardliner, who in March dismissed 9/11 as a big lie, said in the letter that the attacks, quote, were the main pretext for the attacks by NATO on Afghanistan and Iraq. Several times, Ahmadinejad has questioned the accepted version of the al-Qaeda strikes on New York and Washington, which killed nearly 3,000 people. No, Ahmadinejad is not the ideal person I want to see bringing up 9/11 truth and questions. The other couple of fascinating notes, both from 911blogger.com. Fascinating update on the story known as Angel is Next. Perhaps we haven't touched on this in a while. Let's hit the link. Let's hop over to 911blogger.com. A Secret Service page at 10:32 a.m. on September 11, 2001 warned, quote, anonymous call to JOC reporting Angel is target. Angel is the Secret Service code word for Air Force One. JOC means Joint Operations Center. When the president's plane had departed Florida about a half hour earlier, it was en route to D.C. That anonymous threat seems to be what diverted Bush on a high-speed flight across the country, first to Barksdale in Louisiana, and then to an underground command center in Nebraska. Angel is next. They've tried to debunk it, they've tried to dismiss it, but it's yet another in the thousands of inconsistencies in the official conspiracy theory of the events of 9/11. Again, the blank check. Ahmadinejad's right. It's the pretext for all that we see and all that we're continuing to do to this very moment. We also have a fantastic interview on major French news channel, where they interview Loose Change producer Corey Rowe. We should note that Loose Change, An American Coup, is streamable up on Netflix, narrated by Rescue Me star Daniel Sinjata. New films from Jason Burmes and Alex Jones are coming soon to Netflix. Cue them up now to encourage Netflix to carry more. Now we're going to dive into a little bit of history mystery, my friends, and this is one of the stories we touch on the most recent episode of the New World Next Week, my video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Unearthed document ties Kissinger to 1976 car bombing in D.C. We get the original report from the source, from the National Security Archive. There's a better, quicker breakdown, and that's what we go over on New World Next Week. Kissinger effectively gave go-ahead for 76 terror attack, but reading from the National Security Archive, only 5 days before a car bomb planted by agents of the Pinochet regime rocked downtown Washington, D.C. on September 21st, 1976, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger rescinded instructions sent to but never implemented by U.S. ambassadors in the Southern Cone to warn military leaders there against orchestrating, quote, a series of international murders. The secretary, quote, has instructed that no further action be taken on this matter, end quote, stated a September 16, 1976 cable sent from Lusaka, where Kissinger was traveling, to his assistant secretary of state for inter-American affairs, Henry Schlaudeman. The instructions effectively ended efforts by senior State Department officials to deliver a diplomatic demarche approved by Kissinger only 3 weeks early to express our deep concern over plans for the assassination of subversives, politicians, and prominent figures both within the national borders of certain Southern Cone countries and abroad, aimed at the heads of state of Chile, Argentina, and Uruguay. The demarche was never delivered. Peter Kornbluh, the National Security Archive's senior analyst on Chile and author of the book The Pinochet File, says that this new unearthed document tying Kissinger to the 1976 car bombing in D.C., which killed Orlando Letelier and his assistant Ronnie Moffitt. Orlando Letelier was a former Chilean former minister. And we're going to listen to a clip from, that's right, foundation-funded, mainline, left media, Democracy Now! Kissinger rescinded warning on assassinations connected to Operation Condor. Now, you would say, you guys sound like crazy conspiracy theorists. Just because he rescinded this document doesn't mean that he had anything to do with it. But of course we know that he does. And we know that Kissinger can't travel to many places around the world because he'll be snatched up for the war criminal that he is. We have a lot of documentation to go into Letelier, Moffett, Operation Condor, Henry Kissinger, the secret bombings, all of it. And before we play the clip, we just also want to let you know that, of course, Pinochet was the dictator installed after the coup that took place in Chile on 9/11, 1973.
Well, a newly declassified document offers new evidence that the former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger canceled a warning against carrying out a secret program of international political assassinations just days before a former Chilean ambassador was killed in Washington, D.C. In 1976, Chile, Argentina, and Uruguay were engaged in a program of repression of codenamed Operation Condor that targeted their political opponents around the world. The State Department drafted a plan to deliver a stern message to the three governments not to engage in such murders. But the declassified document released Saturday by the National Security Archive shows Kissinger rejected a proposed warning to the government of Uruguay about Condor operations. In a set of instructions cabled to his top Latin American deputy on September 16, 1976, Kissinger ordered that, quote, no further action be taken on this matter by the State Department.
5 days later, the Chilean exile Orlando Letelier and a colleague were killed in a car bombing later tied to Chilean secret police working through the Condor network. For more on the document and the history it reveals, we're joined now by Peter Kornbluh, senior analyst at the National Security Archive and director of its Chile and Cuba documentation projects. He's the author of The Pinochet File, a declassified dossier on atrocity and accountability. Peter, welcome to Democracy Now! Explain exactly what you found.
Well, we found the missing link in the history of Operation Condor and what the State Department, the U.S. government, did after learning about Operation Condor. The documents have dribbled out over the years, and we've had an incomplete picture until now. But basically, the key document is a September 16th cable that Juan just mentioned, where Kissinger rescinds his own instructions, essentially, from 3 weeks earlier, that a demarche, a diplomatic denunciation, be presented to the key country involved in what the CIA had learned was going to be plotting international assassinations around the world. Two of our ambassadors had been resistant to delivering this demarche, including our ambassador in Chile and our ambassador in Uruguay, and we can talk about that. But the key document is Kissinger now saying, take no further steps on this matter, and no further steps were taken. And 5 days later, the most infamous Condor attack carried out in the history of Operation Condor took place right on the streets of Washington, D.C.
And explain what happened.
Well, the agents of the Chilean secret police, DINA, had come to the United States. They had planted a bomb under the car of former Chilean ambassador Orlando Letelier. He was the leading critic and the most effective opponent of the Pinochet regime in Washington and indeed around the world. He was going to work that morning with two young colleagues at the Institute for Policy Studies, Michael Moffett, who was Orlando Letelier's assistant, and Michael's wife, 26-year-old wife, Ronnie Carpen Moffett. The bomb was detonated in Sheridan Circle, right across the street from the residency of the Chilean ambassador, and Orlando Letelier was killed, and Ronnie Moffett was killed as well. It was the most egregious act of international terrorism ever to take place in our nation's capital before 9/11, and just for that matter alone, being an act of international terrorism in our nation's capital, you would think that by now, 34 years later, we would have the entire declassified record of what actually happened. And now we know that this is a situation where the United States government, Kissinger's aides, tried to present a demarche that might have deterred this attack, but Kissinger stepped in and kept it from being delivered in the end.
And Peter Kornbluh, the records declassified so far, do they show to what extent the U.S. government was, or how long the U.S. government was aware of these assassination plans out of Operation Condor?
Well, I have laid out the chronology of what the CIA learned and when over the years in my book, The Pinochet File. John Dinges, in his book, The Condor Years, has a very comprehensive account as well. I'd urge everybody interested to read these. But basically, Operation Condor was established by Chile, by Pinochet's Chile, in November of 1975. The head of the Chilean secret police called together all the kind of heads of secret police services from the Southern Cone to Santiago. That was the first meeting in November of 1975, and then the second meeting in June of 1976. They came together again and started talking about international assassination, not just rendition, not just collaboration surveilling leftists around the world, but taking steps to actually eliminate people like Orlando Letelier, in who had gone into exile in beyond, you know, the Southern Cone. And the CIA learned about these plans right after the June 1976 meeting, and it took them until the end of July to actually tell the State Department, to tell Kissinger's office about this. So Kissinger's office learned at the end of July, and Kissinger himself is presented with a briefing paper on August 3rd, 1976. And by August 23rd, his aides have pushed him to authorize this démarche that was sent down to Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil, and others, but really focused on Uruguay, Argentina, and Chile. Then you have the U.S. ambassador in Chile basically saying, well, Pinochet's feelings will be hurt, and he'll be insulted if I tell him, you know, that that we think he's involved in international assassinations. I think that that's not a very good idea. Give me further instructions. And you had our ambassador, this is some other documents that we've recently obtained through the Free Information Act, our ambassador in Uruguay, Ernest Siracusa, writes back and says, I'm worried that my life will be in danger if I actually raise this subject here. Why don't you take the security risks in Washington? And so this is what is presented to Kissinger, and on September 16th, he basically writes back and says, don't tell our ambassador in Uruguay to proceed, and frankly, I don't want any further steps on this matter.
So let's hop over to historycommons.org for a brief entry on September 11th, 1973. CIA policies in Chile lead to the death of Allende and the rise of Pinochet. CIA covert policies at an expense of $8 million from 1970 to 1973, lead to a coup d'etat in which Salvador Allende, the democratically elected president of Pinochet, or of Chile, rather, is killed. Allende is killed, Pinochet brought to power thanks to CIA funding. 9/11/73. So as I said, that's the first story we cover on the most recent episode of The New World next week, the series from CorbettReport.com and MediaMonarchy.com that breaks down the false political paradigms and gives you the real news that the corporate-controlled media sends down the memory hole. So story number one right there was unearthed document ties Kissinger to 76 car bombing in D.C. Story number two and three we're going to get to, Monsanto under investigation by seven U.S. states and avoiding death by uploading your brain. We also, at the end of the latest New World next week, briefly discuss the upcoming protests and the perfect storm of possible provocateur violence that, again, we see time and time again. The latest podcast, episode 125 from CorbettReport.com, is called Old Hickory and the Den of Vipers. Whatever one thinks of Andrew Jackson and his legacy, he was surely never one to back down from a fight. So when he took on the Second Bank of the United States, it was an unstoppable force against an immovable object. In short, the bank never knew what hit it. Find out how Andrew Jackson killed the bank on episode 125 of the Corbett Report, Old Hickory and the Den of Vipers. Other amazing open source intelligence and alternative media from CorbettReport.com, the Sunday Update video series, NSA wiretapping, the UK digital economy bill and the Bonn climate talks, as well as recent interviews with Barry Zwicker, which is a fantastic interview concerning 9/11 truth issues as they concern us right now, nearly 9 years later. My man Clyde Lewis, as we've been noting now for quite a few months, was picked up by KUFO 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon, and broadcast live Sunday nights at 10 o'clock on KUFO.com, as well as the fine folks who also are bringing you MediaMonarchy.com live right now and rebroadcasted throughout the week to the world, ZeroPointRadio.com. You can support Ground Zero and Zero Point Radio by purchasing episodes from Clyde Lewis for $1. $1. Clyde's most recent episode featured Tracy Twyman and William Kennedy, and it has the improbable title of Empire of the Cacodemons. And yes, that's a real term. C-A-C-O demons. And we read briefly from Clyde's massive article. Basically, Clyde puts together a massive article for each Sunday episode containing tons of documentation, tons of videos. If there is a demonic war happening, then it's evident that the possessed avatars are far more organized now and that they are in positions of power. They also have the armchair warriors who cheer on the carnage and criticize those who see the perpetual human sacrifices in acts of war. When we mix this demonic infestation with apocalyptic overtones of Jonestown, Ruby Ridge, Waco, and other calamities, they're all prologues. They were mere rehearsals to the more dramatic eschatological scenarios to follow. Eschatology means the study of end days. We're basically dealing with a 6,000-year-old meme to bring to pass a 21st-century scheme. Going into the rise of extremism, being fed through the use of manipulation, intimidation, scapegoating, surveillance, social war, civil war, and murder, we eventually realize that our government is possessed with bloodlust and greed. Murder is what serious henchmen on the world stage do. Again, support Clyde Lewis and GroundZeroMedia.org and ZeroPointRadio.com by getting those episodes, sharing them. I do believe coming up this Sunday, they're going to be discussing again what we've already briefly touched on, the upcoming protests, pitting brother against brother, the anarchists versus the Tea Party, versus the cops, versus you. Recent actions going on here in Portland, Oregon, again, have a lot of folks pointing fingers. And again, we need to be very careful about that. So again, I'll say, as we go through this next week, keep your eyes open. And your mind open. We're going to shift gears now and put a little media into the monarchy with a great article from TheWeek.com. And my headline is Behavior Placement. Corporate media greenwashes your lazy ass. The headline from TheWeek.com is also quite appropriate. NBC's cynical mind control games. First, there was product placement. Now, there's behavior placement. The planting of subtle messages in popular TV shows to encourage certain viewer behavior, such as healthy eating or eco-conscious habits, and thereby convince sponsors that their brands will be associated with feel-good, socially aware shows. NBC has owned up to the practice, reports the Wall Street Journal, as part of its green initiative. If Tina Fey is tossing a plastic bottle into the recycling bin, the theory goes audience members will be more apt to do the same. Innocuous or Orwellian? So we'll break down some of the different takes from around the independent blogosphere and media world and mainline takes. Again, just because I've posted and linked to something on Media Monarchy doesn't necessarily mean I endorse it. I'm trying to give you the full spectrum smorgasbord of what is available out there. And that's why we're on the web. Because we can do the research for ourselves. The pressure to be eco-conscious has reached a new height, says Christopher Rosen in Movie Line. NBC implies that people are too dumb to make healthy decisions on their own. And do viewers really need the National Broadcasting Corporation, owned by General Electric, telling them how to run their life? Despite the hubbub, the principles NBC promotes are fairly innocuous, says Amy Chozick, writing this Wall Street Journal article. Climate change may be controversial, but these shows don't make a political statement. They simply show characters making green, conscious decisions. Most people can agree this is a good thing. Unfortunately, healthy habits aren't the bottom line. Clearly, for NBC, behavior placement is about dollar signs and cynicism, says John Burchad, writing for Mediaite. The execs' attempts to manipulate their viewers to draw eco-conscious, health-conscious advertisers is soul-crushing proof that everything is a business. We unfortunately already knew that, but here is more further documentation. We've touched on this in the past, and I wasn't able to post up the flashback link. We've got it somewhere in the massive and ever-growing Media Monarchy archives. Fox and News Corp doing the same thing, putting the same ideas into my favorite show, The Simpsons. As a longtime viewer, I could see it over the last few years. We're just like, these shows are getting weird. They're having urban warfare drills and retina scans and man-made environmental catastrophes. And again, we are trying to learn and teach ourselves and others to become more media literate. I think we've talked before about sometimes maybe making the mistake and thinking that with more media now that people are more media savvy. But sadly, I don't think that's the case, unfortunately. We have a related bit from EFF.org, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and I believe that CorbettReport.com also just had a recent interview with someone from EFF.org. But in a related article, The Entertainment Industry's Dystopia of the Future. We're not easily shocked by entertainment industry overreaching. Unfortunately, it's par for the course. But we were taken aback by the wish list the industry submitted in response to the Intellectual Property Enforcement Coordinator's request for comments on the forthcoming Joint Strategic Plan for Intellectual Property Enforcement. The comments submitted by various organizations provide a kind of window into how these organizations view both intellectual property and the public interest. For example, EFF.org and other public interest groups have asked the IPEC to take a balanced approach to intellectual property enforcement, paying close attention to the actual harm caused, the potential unexpected consequences of government intervention, and compelling countervailing priorities. The joint comment filed by the MPAA, the RIAA, that's the Motion Picture Association of America and the Recording Industry Association of America, and others, stands as a sharp contrast, mapping out a vision of the future where big media priorities are woven deep into the internet, law enforcement, and educational institutions. Consider the following, taken from the entertainment industry submission to the IPEC. Anti-infringement software for home computers. In other words, the entertainment industry thinks consumers should voluntarily install software that constantly scans our computers and identifies, and perhaps deletes, files found to be infringing. Pervasive copyright filtering. The entertainment industry loves widespread filtering as a solution to on-right copyright infringement. In fact, it has persuaded successfully Congress to push these technologies on institutions of higher education. Intimidate and propagandize travelers at the border. Does that iPod in your hand luggage contain copies of songs extracted from friend CDs? Bully countries that have tech-friendly policies. Iceland, we're looking at you. Federal agents working on Hollywood's clock. This is perhaps the most revealing of the proposals. Big Hollywood studios deputizing the FBI and Department of Homeland Stupidity to provide taxpayer-supported muscle for summer blockbuster films. Jokes have been made about SWAT team raids on stereotypical file sharers in college dorm rooms, but the entertainment industry requests to, quote, interdict and to react swiftly with enforcement actions, end quote, brings that joke ridiculously close to reality. What's next? Of course, these comments submitted to the IPEC are just an entertainment industry wish list, an exercise in asking for the moon, but they reveal a great deal about the entertainment industry's vision of the 21st century. Less privacy, with citizens actively participating in their own surveillance. That's the panopticon. We've touched on this time and time again. The second point is a less neutral internet. And third, federal agents acting as paid muscle to protect the profits of summer blockbusters. This is a massively important piece from EFF.org. And I believe James Corbett sent me this. The entertainment industry's dystopia of the future. And again, these are the kind of stories that we need to spend more time on to put more media into the monarchy. It should be no surprise that I'm more in tune and astute and interested in the media and arts and film and music and alternative media and can talk endlessly about those subjects and how they relate to all these things that are central to media monarchy and the alternative media. They let us still talk about the banksters and the gangsters and the families and the predictive programming and all those things. And I can talk about that a lot more easily than I can talk about credit default swaps. But again, we can see those things in films. We've got the Wall Street sequel coming soon, which again is why Richard Grove and Paul Verge of Divergent Films, TragedyandHope.com, PeaceRevolution.org, and their new DVD documentary, 2020 Hindsight, available through MediaMonarchy.com. That's why we put the story out with the headline, Wall Street Whistleblower Proves Money Never Sleeps. That's going to be the subtitle of the Wall Street sequel coming from Oliver Stone this fall. Getting ahead of the media memes. Because unfortunately, we know Oliver Stone really hasn't made a good movie in the last decade. And 2020 hindsight is far more real and important. But alas, and again, my friends, I digress. We've got about a half hour to go, and what we're going to do in the remaining time is hit my two other sites, foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com. But let's take a little moment. Man, last night, one of my favorite artists was in town with a rare appearance, Gil Scott Heron. Easily a godfather of hip-hop. The man behind The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, Whitey on the Moon, Ray Gun, so much more. He was in Portland, and I'm sure I'm probably going to regret it later that I didn't go, but I just have too much on my plate with the show and the site and the Reverend Billy interview and, you know, all the other things that we have to do in our life, like eat. And again, we're going to hit foodworldorder.com in just a moment. But let's go back into the past. Yes, Gil Scott Heron does have a brand new album. It's called I'm New Here. But we're not going to play something from that. We're going to dig back into the early 70s from his record Pieces of Man. This is Gil Scott Heron with Free Will.
Shadows cast by rainbow, there you will meet the sage. Feeding rabbits bits of lettuce or cleaning out the cage. He can give you more direction than you've ever known. Show you your bronze baby shoes down, my how you have grown. Ain't it nice to fly? You're waving as soft clouds.
cars go by, but peace won't be filled of its own free will. When you want to go exploring, you got to find some truth. You can't stand one more day of Christians shouting down at you. You say you don't dig politics, that never was your bag. People who could run for office wave their private flag. Ain't it nice to fly your waving as all clouds go by, but peace won't be still of its own free will.
That's Gil Scott-Heron going back to 1972 from I Misspoke, not the album Pieces of a Man. That's the title track from the album Free Will. A quick glance back at the breaking news. We have three cheers for the SEC as they accuse Goldman Sachs of fraud in subprime mortgage meltdown. And again, my friends, let me remind you and excite you about the forthcoming interview with Reverend Billy on MediaMonarchy.com, where we talk about J.P. Morgan and the banksters behind the destruction of Appalachia. And we talk about being the change you want to see in the world. It should be pretty easy, hopefully, anywhere you live. Now, again, I live in a city, so maybe it was easier to find a credit union. But something very easily that you can do is take your money away from the banksters. For every dollar you give them, they can loan out 10. That's called fractional reserve banking. That's why they don't have everybody's money there in the vault. They realized centuries ago that they could give out more pieces of paper than they'd have to have stock of gold, you know, actual real assets and things. And that's the metaphor, and that's the reality of what's happened. They've taken the real and given us the facsimile. That relates to almost everything that we discuss. So now, let's hop over to foodworldorder.com, and we'll run down the binge and purge list of headlines on Bayer Hazard and Banana Republics. And I believe, on a slightly related note, that some have made the observation that now essentially the United States is a banana republic without any bananas. Bayer admits GMO contamination out of control. Drug and chemical agent Bayer AG has admitted that there's no way to stop the uncontrolled spread of its genetically modified crops. Even the best practices can't guarantee perfection, said Mark Ferguson, the company's defense lawyer in a recent trial. Two Missouri farmers sued Bayer for contaminating their crops with modified genes from an experimental strain of rice engineered to be resistant to the company's Liberty brand herbicide. The contamination occurred in 2006 during an open field test of the new rice, which was not approved for human consumption. According to the plaintiff's lawyer, Don Downing, genetic material from the unapproved rice contaminated more than 30% of all rice cropland in the United States. Bayer was supposed to be careful. Bayer was not careful, and that rice did escape into commercial rice supplies. Now, of course, it should be noted, and let's just run a quick Googler on the interwebs. And we know their connections to the Nazis are well documented. Congo Civil War. We've also noted HIV-infected blood products, Bayer's drug Factor VIII, contaminated with HIV. Sent around the world, knowingly. Bayer, as well as IBM, helped provide the physicality to pull off what happened. IBM and their Hollerith punch card systems. Bayer with their gas. Growing concern over marketing tainted beef. That's from the USA Today. Former U.S. hostages sue Chiquita for supporting terrorists. This is from allgov.com, and I believe we've touched on this before. And again, thanks to allgov.com for following this story. We'll also remind you, we interviewed the editor-in-chief of allgov.com, David Walachinsky, recently. But three employees of defense contractor Northrop Grumman are suing Chiquita International for supporting terrorists in Colombia that held them hostage for 5 years. They were held hostage by the FARC, terrorist organization, private military contractors. We've seen this throughout history. United Fruit. We see the world and other nations that are rich in resources being destabilized, having a dictator installed, usually with CIA funding, so that the resources can be taken control of. We should also note that, of course, Richard Grasso flew to Colombia many years ago to ask the FARC, hey guys, you should invest your drug money in Wall Street. Look that up. USDA workers grow gardens for soup kitchens and food pantries. Again from allgov.com. A positive bit. Supplements exempted from codex language in the food safety bill. Lots of moves happening. And again, this is something you can take some control of. You may not be able to stop the war in Afghanistan, but we can think about what we've shoved down our gullet. And I always tell you, I'll be the first to tell you that I'm not perfect with that, and it's one of my weakest areas. And I think that's why doing foodworldorder.com is helping me to kind of smack myself awake. The last note on this binge and purge, again with the meat, USDA finds major problems with toxins in meat supply. Again, from allgov.com. Our next post is the second story we covered on the most recent New World Next Week, Monsanto under investigation by seven U.S. states. This from organicconsumers.org. At least seven U.S. state attorneys general are investigating whether Monsanto has abused its market power to lock out competitors and raise prices on seed. Iowa, Illinois, Ohio, Texas, Virginia, and two other unidentified states are in a working group to investigate the biotech giant. States are probing whether Monsanto violated laws by offering rebates to seed distributors for excluding rival seeds, imposing limits on combining the product with other genetic modifications, or offering cash incentives to switch farmers to more expensive generation of seed varieties. The state investigations add pressure on Monsanto. The U.S. Department of Justice is investigating the company's marketing practices, and DuPont has accused Monsanto of anti-competitive practices in licensing litigation. We could hope that DuPont and Monsanto would destroy each other. But David Sokol, a law professor at the University of Florida and expert on antitrust matters, told Bloomberg that a state-level investigation on top of the federal probe can lengthen the lawsuit and potential settlements and can increase uncertainty and costs for Monsanto. You know, the company that we also recently reported on, Food World Order, was named Company of the Year by Forbes. A disturbing piece, again, from allgov.com with the PDF to download the documentation for you. Again, what we try and do is a little bit of the extra legwork. If there's a new report, if there's a video release, if there's a press release, if there's something, we try and bring it to you. And that's what always frustrated me, and still does, about mainline mainstream media. They'll mention something, but not give you the source. I forget where I heard it. I just heard it a couple of days ago. It's like, and now here's a government press release read by a supermodel. But seriously, how eggs are made in the U.S. Chickens living on factory farms endure suffering described as staggering, according to an undercover investigation carried out by the Humane Society. An HS investigator spent 2 months working inside four different factory farms owned by two of the nation's largest egg producers, Rose Acre Farms and Rembrandt Enterprises, and witnessed industry practices that, quote, are simply rotten. We don't have the time, and maybe I don't have the stomach to get into some of the nasty information contained therein. And that's what's difficult, even when you try and make a positive, eco-conscious move, they've already got you in the next box. They've already co-opted the alternative. So whether we're talking about music or whether we're talking about food, the same things happen. Now let's hop over to cyberspacewar.com for the third story we cover on the most recent New World Next Week with CorberReport.com. Avoiding death by uploading your brain. Ken Hayworth, a postdoctoral fellow at Harvard, has come up with an unusual potential form of immortality by preserving the human brain in a computer. Most theories of extending life, such as using experimental supplements or supersensitive health monitoring, work with a person's existing body. Hayworth suggests that it might be possible to copy your brain, complete with all its thoughts, memories, and learned abilities for use in a form other than the body that you used all your life. Theoretically, human thoughts can be copied and loaded onto a hard drive, Hayworth insists, which is why he's seeking funding for a brain preservation technology prize, which would solicit solutions for his hypothesis. The process would likely entail freezing or preserving the brain shortly before death, then slicing it into nanometer-thin wafers, scanning it, and uploading it onto a computer. My friends, the future is now. And as it all, again, connects to the elite, oligarchs, the societies, the bloodlines, the families, the organizations, life extension technologies are and will be a reality. Are you going to be a head in a jar like in Futurama? Probably not. Probably not anytime soon, if at all. And if at all, it ain't for you anyway. It's for them. You think the seed vault in Svalbard, Norway is for you? No, it's for them. I guess I always found this sinisterly amusing flashback. To October 2009 on Media Monarchy, Ted Williams' severed head abused in cryonics lab. Our second story on cyberspacewar.com continues this meme and this discussion of what we're really talking about is what's called transhumanism. And it's just a part, as much a part of the elite's agenda as eugenics has been, transhumanism will be. From the Associated Press, Intel shows off mind-reading brain scan technology. Mind-reading may no longer be the domain of physics and fortune tellers. Now some computers can do it too. Software that uses brain scans to determine what items people are thinking about was among the technological innovations showcased last Wednesday by Intel Core, which drew back the curtain on a number of projects that are still under development. The software analyzes functional MRI scans to determine what parts of a person's brain is being activated as he or she thinks. Eventually, this technology could help the severely physically disabled to communicate. The vision is being able to interface to information, to your devices, and to other people without having an intermediary device. And as we always see, these stories are sold to you with the happy face, with the human interest story. We want to implant microchips into your Alzheimer's-ridden grandmother so she doesn't wander away. Well, that sounds reasonable. We'd like to put microchips in HIV patients so we can track their whereabouts, so we can contain the scourge of AIDS. I guess that kind of sounds reasonable. It's starting to get a little... Well, how about we put a microchip in your brain so little Tommy can interface with his Xbox 780 or God knows what's coming very soon. Selling it to the kids. It's all there. The aforementioned International Business Machines, IBM, the final solutions company, were recently giving a seminar in Portland, Oregon, discussing just such a thing. Again, these things are here, and these things are now, and ultimately, the worst of it is going to be for us. The life extension technologies and the seed vault and all those things, no. But they want to get a microchip in you. You know this. You know it's going to be in our cards first. It's already happening. There's legislation for it now. Lindsey Graham, Chuck Schumer want the National Workers ID card for all workers. They're going to sell that under the guise of immigration reform, but it's going to be for all workers. Some of the things we also mention on this topic on New World Next Week is, again, this transhumanism agenda and some of the great background, recent Korber Report episodes and flashbacks, Transhumanism and You, and also interviews with Greg Nicoletos of We the People Will Not Be Chipped. And you can hit that at wethepeoplewillnotbechipped.com or the much easier to digest wakeup.tv. Our final post on Cyberspace War is the DEFCON 415, the April 15th list of headlines. Again, transhumanism, Twitter, radio waves, and fireballs. A great piece from Michael Vail on pretty much the best alternative news site out there. I'm always in awe of the work that Michael Vail and Doug Owen have pulled off on blacklistednews.com. This new exclusive article from Michael Vail, Merging Man and Machine, We Are the Internet. From federaljack.com, YouTube goes Orwellian, now requiring SMS from every new registrant. A fascinating bit, and the press release from the horse's mouth, from the Library of Congress, from loc.gov, how tweet it is, the Library of Congress acquires the entire Twitter archive. I'm not sure whether to laugh or cry over the amounts of things that are going to be contained in the Library of Congress now. Russia has no plans to deploy weapons in space, but of course the Obama administration is now rolling NASA into the Pentagon, and we're going to see the weaponization of space. We're tracking all the attacks, as I've said, on inner space and outer space, and that's why we started cyberspacewar.com last year. Cyber war doomsayer Mike McConnell, remember, we've talked about him. He's the doomsayer talking to Congress saying you're not doing enough for the cyber war. There's an I-9-11 coming very soon, and as we've said time and time again, Richard Clark and Lawrence Lessig have both admitted that there's an I-Patriot Act sitting on the shelf waiting for an I-9-11 event that, of course, could be blamed on anyone. Cyber war doomsayer Mike McConnell lands $34 million in government cyber war contracts for his company. I don't believe he owns it, but he's a key player and a mover and shaker behind the private military-industrial complex contractors Booz Allen Hamilton. Always a heavy hand involved in the terror drills, which of course now we're seeing the terror is going to move into the web. The grid. Cyber war commander Keith Alexander survives Senate hearing. Of course, he's going to be the head of Cybercom, Lieutenant General Keith Alexander. And as we've said time and time again, from the military's own white paper, Information Operations Roadmap, they want to, quote, fight the net like an enemy weapons system. Mysterious radio waves emitted from a nearby galaxy. We're hopping to newscientist.com for more on this. And again, we see these events. We see these things speeding up. There is something strange in the cosmic neighborhood. An unknown object in the nearby galaxy, M82, has started sending out radio waves, and the emission does not look like anything seen anywhere in the universe before. We don't know what it is, says co-discoverer Tom Muxlow of Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics in the UK. Mysterious radio waves. The last note, bringing it back to Earth, bringing it down to the spectacle for all to see. Massive fireball reported across Midwestern skies.
A video has been released showing a howling fireball streaking through the sky above America's Midwest late last night. The U.S. National Weather Service has confirmed that the light was a meteor. The phenomenon was apparently seen by dozens across five states, and many also reported hearing a thundering sound. Experts say it's likely the event was part of an ongoing meteor shower that happens every few years.
Oh, yeah, it was just a meteor. Nothing to see here. I'm sure there were no military testings of new DARPA, God knows what, from Boeing and General Dynamics and all our favorite private military-industrial complex friends. So that's the end of my mysterious radio waves emitting from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. This brings to a close another spine-chilling edition of MediaMonarchy.com. This has been episode 166, April 16th, 2010. And let's take a brief look at some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. You know, there's little stat counters you can put on websites that show I've had X amount of hits. It gives you the back end to see who's visiting your website and where they're coming from. So years ago, I started to track some of the interesting characters that seem to show up and sometimes can spook you, sometimes can tip you off to something that may be a bigger story than you thought, because when you start to see a bunch of spooks searching for it, maybe you're on to something. The FBI Criminal Justice Information Systems out of Bridgeport, West Virginia, visited MediaMonarchy.com, and they were checking out last year's interview that I did with Spencer Thayer of ChicagoCopWatch.org. There was a heated F-book debate and discussion going on, so it was all out there to see. So yes, check it out, the interview with Spencer Thayer, whoever you are in Bridgeport, West Virginia, at the FBI Criminal Justice Information Systems. We also had the Naval Ocean System Center out of Yorktown, Virginia, and the Michigan Legislative Council out of Lansing, Michigan. That's going to do it my friends. And again, let me implore you and invite you and excite you to please help me spread the word, make this go viral. Again, this is the kind of thing that you can be the change that you want to see in the world. The personal is political. The local is the global. My interview with Reverend Billy of the Church of Life After Shopping is going to be available by the time you're re-listening to this show. So again, please spread the word. Don't hate the media. Become the media. My name's James Evan Pilato again, your host, webmaster, site, show, MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, telling you, begging you, I love you and I thank you for all that we share and all that we grow and go through. Get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.